Hello, and welcome back to the Band of Gamers podcast. This is episode 39, and I am Greylock3491, your host for tonight. And I am joined by two of my good friends. The first, DBQ Hams.
Hello, everyone.
And Zeus Adamus.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
And two guys I know you're very familiar with over the last few podcasts. I guess we've been doing this for now over a year, and this is our 39th episode. So pretty excited about that, and the big 4-0 next week. As we do every week, we start off with talking about what we've played. And DBQ, why don't you go first? What have you been playing?
So last week I told Osiris Prime that I was going to be playing Disney Infinity Marvel Battlegrounds, and so my sons and I have been playing that. So this is, so Disney Infinity is the Toys to Life game, right? This past year it was Star Wars, and the year before it was Marvel. The Marvel Battlegrounds ends up playing out like a big 4v4 arena battle, similar to Smash Brothers. Almost plays more like Power Stone in terms of being able to move around the environment. There's some destructible pieces. One of the things that's been neat about Disney Infinity 3.0 is the combat was done by Ninja Theory. So this is Heavenly Sword, the new DMC, Enslaved, Into the West. You know, very kind of combo heavy, but accessible. You know, granted, it is kind of for kids, so it's not super combo heavy. I mean, this is not Street Fighter or Tekken in terms of combos, but it's been a lot of fun, right? And my sons and I have a number of characters from the previous year, and you scan them in, and you don't have to have them like many Toys to Life games where you have to have them sitting on a portal to be able to play with them. You scan them in, and they just become part of the character select screen. And they also do something neat, which is kind of part of a lot of free-to-play games, where they give you, there's timed trials on different heroes. Each day, there's two heroes that you can use tokens, which you earn by playing the game, to try out people or to use people that you don't have, that you don't own the action figure for. So it's kind of a nice way to tease and get people the ability to try out other people that they might want to buy. Or if you don't have a big roster, it's a nice way to not have to go out and buy a whole bunch just to play with other people because you have that ability. It's been a lot of fun. It's a nice combo system. If Prime was here, he's played Disney Infinity with his kids. And so one of the things that my sons and I, you know, we tried... What if you're the Hulk versus Black Widow? You know, does a heavy character do more damage in a melee attack versus a lightweight character? You know, so the damage scales a little bit, so the Hulk does more damage. There's nice, if you've unlocked other skill sets as you've played through the other games, those things carry over. So what it ends up being is if you have high-level characters, as my 10-year-old continued to beat up on my 12-year-old and myself with his high-level Hawkeye. So we learned, you know, there's some quirks. It's fun. It's accessible. It's a, you know, there's a lot of kind of joking and yelling at the screen or at each other as we're playing. So it was a good kind of couch co-op competition game. Not super deep. You know, it's as deep as you make it out to be, right? Like it's playing Smash Brothers, basically. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that. The other Toys to Life game, so I've been on, I guess this week has been a Toys to Life type of game for me, type of week. And this one, Zeus and Grey, I think you guys will enjoy. So LEGO Dimensions is the LEGO entry into the Toys to Life series. And my son was super excited about it last year. He used his birthday money to pre-order it, played it for a little bit, played it for maybe a week and a half, and never really touched it again. He got the Doctor Who set for Christmas that goes in the game, never even put it together, never played it. Really, LEGO Dimensions by itself is just another LEGO game, and they all kind of play out the same. But this week, there was a new character pack or level pack that came out, which was LEGO Dimensions Midway Arcade. And I picked it up mainly because there's 22 arcade games that are in there. And they're emulated really well. It plays out. The story mode kind of mirrors almost like a Wreck-It Ralph type of piece where some of the arcade things come to life. But the neat thing is I can play Gauntlet or Gauntlet 2 or Super Sprint or Joust, Rampage, Paperboy, right? There's a ton of well-emulated games. Granted, I probably could play them illegally on the internet, but this has been a fun way to relive them and play them with my kids. One of the first games is Spy Hunter that you have to get a certain score on, and my 10-year-old, who was whooping me in Marvel Battlegrounds, couldn't hit the high score and handed it over to me, and my years of playing Spy Hunter in gas stations and hotel lobbies came back to me, and I was able to get the high score in a short period of time. So it's been kind of a fun trek down memory lane that way. And then I guess finally, and we'll talk more about this in the topic piece, is I've been playing more of The Division, picking at it, you know, both some of the side missions and the story missions. But at the same time, I've had, I guess I've had a need for something a little more fun and whimsical, like my Toys to Life games this week versus the rundown, abandoned New York City. So that's what I've been playing. Zeus, what have you been playing this week?
So I kind of been winding back the Wayback Machine, I guess, on my end, which isn't too unusual. I was really excited to just kind of spun the roulette wheel in my backlog carousel and decided that I wanted to, number one, play on my CyberPower PC Fangbook 3, which is my one of my PC gaming stations, and I specifically wanted to break out my SciTech X45 flight control system, because I invested in upgrading my joysticks over the holidays, just adding a couple additional ones, because the X45 I've had for, like, probably a decade, and so I wanted to get some more time in on it, but I also wanted some new sticks, but I broke out the old flight control system, and decided I wanted to either play a flight sim or a space sim that was a high enough fidelity flight model that it warranted using the X45, because with most space sims, they lend themselves better to more of kind of an arcade joystick that has a twist control for rudder, just because of in space you have to, your bank and your roll axis is typically on different controls, so, but free space is a high enough fidelity flight model that it actually benefits from using a flight control system. So I rigged that up and started that game up. Free Space 2 is a 1999 game, I think, made by Volition, and I think published under Interplay. That was a sequel to Descent Free Space, which was a spin-off of the Descent series. So, it had high-powered talent in it for the voiceovers. Robert Loggia and Ronnie Cox were in it. And it's probably, arguably, to me, one of the best space simulators of all time. Came out around the same time as X-Wing Alliance, which I also think pretty highly of. But I have to say the space combat in Free Space 2 is even better than X-Wing Alliance. And throughout the course of the campaign, you get access to newer ships and newer weapons, and then you can start kind of mix and matching your loadout. You can make yourself fly one spacecraft and have your wingman fly another. The coolest thing is you get to engage with capital ships and target their subsystems. So I think I actually posted a video in CAG as part of just as a weekly nostalgia reel, and I think in there you can see me kind of cycle through some of the subsystems on the capital ships and quickly remembered that the best thing to do with a capital ship, instead of focusing on taking down its weapons, is to take out its engines, and then the whole thing just goes dead in space, which is pretty awesome. And then I also broke out, because I was extremely tired that night that I was gaming and doing video capture. It was like my last 30 minutes, and I just wanted something simple and easy, and I guess a little brainless to play, something that at least would just be based on instincts rather than having to think about it a lot, and I broke out a Grid, also for the PC, and forced myself through some drift events, which I know I can't stand. So I was a little cranky midway into that session, but then I converted over back to wheel-to-wheel racing, and then I was very satisfied with the experience there, and bought a Toyota Supra, which is just for whatever reason seems to be an awesome car in whatever racing game that you play, and raced that in Japan, and then cut over to the European circuit, and I can't even remember what it's a TVR, which was a really popular car in Project Gotham Racing 3, I remember back in the day, drove an open canopy TVR in a downtown on a downtown racetrack, so that was pretty cool. How about you, Gray?
Wow, you guys are bringing back the memories. I still got the Spy Hunter soundtrack running in my head. Thank you, DB. And I know, what a great tune, right? And I love Free Space too. I was a big Descent guy. I jumped in early with the shareware, and then picked up a copy, and then picked up Descent 2. And Free Space 2, I think at the time, was the best, absolutely best looking space sim on the market. It was just awesome. And I never finished it. I finished X-Wing. I finished several flight sims, but I never finished Free Space. So I got to get over to CAG. I saw your post. I just didn't have time when I found it. I didn't have time to watch it. I got to go over there and watch it. As far as I'm concerned, the big news was the defeat in the Vault of Glass, and probably my last attempt at doing a raid in Destiny, because I had worked really hard to make sure everybody was going to be there, and then a third of the team didn't show up. You know, two people at last minute decided not to show for whatever reasons, and we spent 3.5 hours grinding our way through it and got to the very end, and it was time to go to bed, and we just kept failing and failing and failing. So, but on a brighter note, I had this brainchild. And, of course, DB, as always, is planting these seeds where he tells me about these great sales that I shouldn't spend money on, and I go and buy them anyways. And but I had this great idea. If I create two Steam accounts, one for each of my grandchildren, then every time I see a great kids game on sale on Steam for 2 cents or 50 cents or whatever, I can just gift it to them. And then when they get to be a little older, they'll have a great library. And so that's what I did. I actually took a couple of old laptops. I bought a couple of SSDs. I got 120 gig SSDs for under 50 bucks. So I picked up, I had one, and I picked up another one, and reinstalled Windows. One, it was Vista. One, was it was Windows 7, and they're enjoying playing Star Wars Legos. And also, finally got Jedi Knight work, and I got it working single player. Now I got to try to get the Ethernet driver to work. I don't even know if it's possible, but I did play through, I think, all of level 1 while my wife was watching TV, watching something. I just, you were running it on my low-end netbook. Got through all of level 1 in Jedi Knight. You know, it just reminds me of some of the classic things, like hidden areas. Like, for me, that was the first game that had a lot of secret hidden areas with all kinds of extra goodies and secret passages where you could get places, the you know, shortcuts and whatnot. And it's just a very, even though it's very crude looking, it's a very, very enjoyable game. So I did that. Then played The Division. Man, the last 2 weeks I played a lot of Division. Well, I shouldn't say a lot. Not as much as a lot of people on my friends list. I got over 20 people on my friends list who replied to me that they picked it up. And I played co-op with, I think, 10 different people so far. Just having a blast. It's a very, I don't want to say complicated, but it's a busy game. The menus are really, there's a lot to absorb. And it's a lot like Destiny, where somehow they made everything feel, I don't know, kind of intuitive maybe. There's just a lot of info on the screen when you go into your menus. And I didn't play the betas. I didn't do any research. This was one of those games I just wanted to go in and have some fun. So I'm learning as I go, and I'm trying to live up to that, the phrase that it's the journey, not the destination. I'm not rushing to the end. I don't even care if I ever finish it. I want to have fun. I already spun up a second character. My first character's only on 11. I already spun up a second character so I could play with other people who had lower characters, and I'm enjoying it. Third person cover mechanics. I've always had a hard. I never had a easy time in Gears of War, so I struggle with that a little bit in the Division. But sometimes I just like to take my character, and I don't know if you saw the Casual Adult Gamer site, you could see I updated the look from the Fallout 4 look to the Division look, and I really just enjoyed walking around downtown New York, even though it's kind of a nightmarish, depressing looking area. But it was just fun just to walk around downtown and check out the sights. I think I was telling somebody the other day, I found an area where there's a radio playing Christmas music, and I just hang out there for a couple of minutes. And so I'm enjoying it. I really like the drop-in, drop-out co-op. I like how you can see all your friends on the map. I like the safe houses. There's a lot of things comparable to from it or translatable from it to Destiny, even though they're two very different games. A lot of what worked in one works in another, including the drop-in, drop-out co-op. I love that. And some of the single-player missions are hard to do by yourself. Just like in Destiny, you can really struggle, and they really have to use your noggin to get through of them. Whereas if you have some friends, it gets easier. And I don't know if that, but that's kind of the same way it was in Destiny too. It's just some of the missions seemed a little tedious without help. But I like the four-player co-op. I like the four-player slots. I'm also kind of, well, you know what? We're going to talk about this later, so I'm going to stop there before I go too far into it, and we'll talk about it more later. The last thing I did was play some Destiny. My brother picked it up a few weeks ago, and so him, me, and Mace are playing through on all the original 20 missions, and enjoying that walkthrough again. Although they changed a couple things that had me and Mace a little confused with the storyline, that I don't know if we figured out yet. But that's fun, and that's what I've been playing. Any questions for me, guys?
I think I mean, I know I have Destiny or Division conversations, but we'll save them for our topic. So.
All right. Well, I wanna. We're gonna start a new segment this week, and after the what we've been playing section, and it's we're gonna call it the community news, kind of a break for the other hosts on the podcast. They can go grab a glass of water, and just want to spend 30 seconds announcing some community news. The first news item is, well, it relates to Band of Gamers. We now have a new link on our website where you can subscribe to our podcast for Android. So if you're an Android user, they don't have a service like iTunes, but the people over at Blurberry have come up with the subscribe on Android link, and so I've set that up. So if you have an Android phone, I don't have one anymore, so I can't test this out. Please test it out. Let us know what you think. Send us an email at podcast@bandofgamers.net, and let us know if it works and how well it works. You can also get the RSS feed there, and of course iTunes, which is what I use. I have an iPhone, and so that's the first community news. The second one was sent in by Solar Racer X, who is really hosting the Car Club Forza 6 group. I was playing with them for a while, until my schedule changed and I wasn't able to stay on late Sunday nights. But Solo has put together an awesome video of the top five from last week's Sunday night car club races. I think they have 11 people now. They still have room for more, so if you're interested, check that out. You can find Solo's top five clips from last week's races at on his YouTube channel, probably the easiest place to find it. Just search for Solo Racer X. Solo Racer, Racer X, and that's all one word, and it's pretty good. I especially like number one. I won't spoil the surprise, but it was pretty cool to watch some of the things that can happen inside of Forza 6, and just a very well put together video. So that is this week's community news, and on to segment number two, this week in gaming news, and we'll start with DBQ Hams.
Okay, so last week was GDC, and whether or not there were a whole lot of announcements that came out of GDC, there was definitely information, right? That there was more build shown. There are lots of good panels. If you get online, you can view some of those or at least read some write-ups. I guess the big piece of news that I do want to talk about is the PlayStation VR. So the PlayStation VR, you know, on this podcast we've talked about Vive, we've talked about Oculus Rift, and PlayStation VR is listed as coming out in October. We got our first look at the final headset, the little processor box that'll go along with it, and we get a price point. We get a price point of $399, so $400 compared to Oculus's Rift's $599 or $600, so a $200 price break. But a day later, they come out with a bundle, which really is going to give you what you need for the PlayStation VR. So it's $400 for the headset, but then you need the PlayStation camera. So some people may have the camera, some people may not. Right now at Best Buy, the camera's on sale for $40, so it retails for about $60. So now you're up to about $450 probably. And then you're going to need at least two Move controllers, which on Amazon right now, they're $24 to $28. So again, you're looking at about another $50. Which then brings that price up to about $500 for the PlayStation VR. So there is a bundle that's coming out. The bundle pre-order goes up in the next couple days here, which will be the VR headset, the Move controllers, two Move controllers, a pack-in game, and the camera, all for $500. So it gets you everything you need, but again, you know, VR is a pricey endeavor, right? I mean, we've talked about Oculus Rift being at $600 and that it's not a consumer, you know, it's a early adopter type of hardware at this stage. Vive at $800 is even more pricey, but you get additional motion controllers and other pieces there. And now PlayStation VR is effectively $500. That it's going to be listed at $400, but you're going to need another $100 worth of stuff in order to really get the full experience. So, you know, it's still going to be more than the PlayStation 4 as a console. I was really excited about the PSVR because I thought it was going to be something that, given the install base of the PlayStation 4, that, you know, it could be a good gateway to get VR into homes. But at $500, I still don't know that it's going to be a real big holiday seller. So, Zeus, Gray, do you guys have any thoughts? Zeus, you've talked about VR and kind of the concerns about price point. Where do you think, how do you think Sony did on this one?
So ridiculous. Like, it's, I mean, the expense of that kit and the fact that in order for it to work effectively, you have to buy two of the least desired peripherals, I would argue, maybe in the history of console games. Maybe not in the history, but the point is that despite all the lessons learned from, like, the Sega Genesis generation with, like, the Sega CD and the Sega 32X, you know, and what was that peripheral that was there for the Xbox 360, the big robot joystick thing that you could only play with one game?
Oh, for Mech Warrior or Mech Assault?
Yeah. That, you know, it's just, I hate to throw the term around, but I would say I think core gamers, like, just aren't interested in those two peripherals. So the notion that you have to buy them in order for the VR kit to work effectively just feels like totally trolling me as a gamer. You know, forcing me to buy these things that you've already designed and built and put in your supply chain and can't sell enough of, you know, going about it to kind of force me to have to buy it to onboard onto VR is a little preposterous. I feel like the price is too far out there for casual adopters or people who are on the fence and interested in VR. You know, the Samsung Galaxy S7 just came out. I upgraded my wife on our Verizon plan because she was due. And got it for a pre-order, and with the pre-order, I selected the option to get the Samsung Gear VR for free. So, you know, and that deal is continuing despite the fact that pre-orders are over. So, you know, I guess my point is there's an effective way for people to experiment and try out VR. You know, there's Google Cardboard. There's other things that are low cost, no cost. The Gear VR is $99. There are other ways to effectively, like, test the waters of VR without needing to go spend $500 on a PlayStation VR headset kit.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I think that it's going to be, even if they bundle it, right? I mean, if they bundle it as a holiday package with the PlayStation 4, what is that going to be, $800? I mean, that's, yeah, it'll be a hard price to throw down. Gray, what are your thoughts on it?
You know, I think it comes down to the killer app. So, I just think back to my original Xbox. You know, I had kids. I was young. Still had here, and you know, to me, it was just a huge expense. And but my wife still found a way to get it for me for Christmas, and I plugged Halo in, and it was like, the moment I started playing Halo, you know, I think that was one of the only games I played through the night when I got it. You know, the moment I said is, I don't care how much this thing costs, this was worth every penny. And I played through that game so many times and played through it with my older children to it, who were, you know, close enough to that teenage where it was appropriate. And we just played that game over and over and over, and four-player split screen, and had to buy additional controllers. And even though it seemed like this huge expense to me at the time, the killer app made it, you know, made it worth the while. And I think that's what VR needs. So I'm not going to write off the PlayStation VR just yet. And I think there's two type of experiences that people are going to be looking for. There's going to be that, hey, let's you know, maybe like the Kinect. Let's clear everything out of the middle of the living room floor, put on the VR, and pretend we're in some virtual world. In which case, you're going to need those Move controllers, so the system knows where your hands are. The camera can see your hands and knows where they are. But for me, I'm more interested in the immersive space sim, flight sim, Skyrim world, where I can't walk for 20 miles in my living room like I would need to in Skyrim. And, you know, in a space sim, I'm going to be in the cockpit of a starfighter, so I don't need to move around that much. So I don't need, I wouldn't imagine for those experiences, I'm going to need the Move controllers. May need the camera. Again, I'm assuming the Move controllers would be in your hands and not attached to the headset. but I could be wrong. Do the Move controllers, the motion controllers attached to the headset, or are they for your hands? Let me ask that question.
So my understanding is the Move controllers are for your hands, right? The camera is there for head tracking, so you could do just the camera and the headset and use your PlayStation controller, which would be very similar to what Oculus is giving you, right? That you're getting a Xbox One controller with the pre-order. So I think that works there. You know, Gray, I think you're right. I mean, the killer app is going to make a difference. You know, a lot of what came out, there were a lot of quote-unquote experiences, right? The Star Wars Battlefront experience, the Assassin's Creed experience, which is kind of an on-the-rails type of you know, thrill ride. You know, it reminds me of 1990s VR type of things. Granted, a whole lot better resolution, but that immersive gameplay piece versus just an experience will be, you know, and I guess the truth is, I'm not here to write off PlayStation VR either. I think it's a gonna end up being the entry point for VR if VR catches. I guess my disappointment is I don't think it's gonna catch this fall based on those price points for all three systems. I think we're still a year out before prices come down to the point where it is a little more economical. And by that time, maybe there are those killer app games. So the other piece of news that I have is, and this is a patch that just came out today, which is tying into our topic. So there's a patch for The Division. It's patching some things within the Dark Zone. There's been a lot of, there's been some good questions around the end game with the Division in terms of how much experience people lose, how much loot, what are the loot rate drops, right? I mean, very similar to Diablo, very similar to Destiny in terms of that loot loop again. So this one gives you, you can move between checkpoints in the Dark Zone, which is pretty beneficial. It's improving the drop rates, and you're losing less experience when you're in the, when you die in the Dark Zone. So one of the things that we'll talk about probably in the topic here is the Dark Zone. But the way that it works is that when you die there, you have your level, which is a single player level, and then you have your Dark Zone level, which is your multiplayer level. And dying in the Dark Zone loses experience just as much as you gain it. So this kind of slows down that bleed, I guess, a little bit. So we'll see. I think the nice thing is that, you know, it's been out for a week and a half now, you know, and that they're continuing to patch it. You know, Massive has been very active in terms of listening to the community. So hopefully that's a good sign for them to continue to try to balance the Division. So those are my two news stories. I think one last thing about PlayStation VR that I do want to bring up, because you kind of talked about it a little bit, Gray, of playing, you know, that one of the things that PlayStation VR will do natively is you can play all your PlayStation 4 games in the headset, right? It's not going to be a, you know, full immersion experience, but it allows you to kind of dive into a big screen aspect on your head. Whether or not you're going to sit and want to play 20 hours of a story-based game with a headset on will be a different question. So lots of good questions coming around VR, and hopefully we'll hear more as we get closer to E3. So those are my news stories. Zeus, what news do you have for the week?
So I want to go back to ask you a question about VRDB. So you're saying that one of the capabilities is that the headset allows you to basically play any previously released games via the headset. Are there a pair of headphones that hook in and connect with the headset, or is it just the visual?
That's a good question. Looking at the headset, it doesn't look like there's headphones that come over the top. You know, I guess the option would be that if you're playing it on a PlayStation 4, you may have a existing headset that you're using, which again adds more weight and bulk to your head. So yeah, I'm not sure, right? Because if you're gonna put it on your head and play, Uncharted 4, you're gonna want the sound with it as well. So, but yeah, I guess they didn't really. I've heard some, you know, sites talk about playing and that the experience was good, but I haven't heard anybody or read about how the sound experience has been.
Yeah, so I see images of it now online with what looked to be a first-party set of headphones that are not integrated with the headset, but definitely are, you know, the way they sit, they definitely wear comfortably. My issue would be if I were going to do that, my problem is that I can't play in the VR headset and then just having the sound coming out of, like, a flat-panel TV in front of me in basically the audio version of 2D, right? I mean, that would just be really disjointed and fragmented. So if I'm going to play visually in the headset, I have to have audio to match, and it has to be orally correct, A-U-R-A-L-L-Y, right? I mean, I can't. The sound has got to match what I'm seeing on my face, or else I'm very likely to get some sort of weird, strange vertigo, right, and get nauseous and all kind of stuff, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would think, you know, the idea of if there's any type of lag with that sound would be problematic. Yeah, or even just the fact that your vision, the game that you're watching is inches away from your head and your sound is coming in your system, you know, in your living room. Yeah, I think there is going to be a disconnect. So having some type of headset on. Also, if you're playing it through your headset, or you're listening to the sound in your living room, why aren't you just playing it on your TV, right? I mean, I could see that this is somebody who maybe doesn't have a big TV, or that there's a lot of other things going on in your home or apartment, but then at the same time, then you're sitting in one spot with a giant, you know, contraption on your head while the rest of your life goes on around you. Yeah, I can see that it could be an interesting experience, but the practicality of it, I'm still kind of questioning.
Right, right, no doubt. So, so from my end in news, you know, one of the things that caught my eye was over on Game Watcher, you know, a recent statement by Epic indicating that they are still committed to Fortnite. So I don't know if you guys remember this. This game actually demoed like about 4 or 5 E3s ago. It's an Unreal 4 Unreal Engine 4 game where you kind of, you know, the action is kind of centered around basically a base that you kind of build up over time, and you're able to, you know, add tower defenses to the base and barricades and all sorts of things. And it's you fighting against zombies. So it's multiplayer capable. You know, I've been really interested in this game. And kind of a weird, like not the norm for a zombie game. It's very brightly colored. And kind of has a color palette very similar to Team Fortress. So, you know, I've always thought this game was really, really interesting. But it's kind of gone dark in the last couple of years. And you know, Tim Sweeney, CEO of Epic Games, just recently stated, hey, look, we definitely had to do a lot of work on it. You know, and I guess there's another game that they have coming out called Paragon, which has also caught my eye, but basically, you know, they diverted a lot of resources over to Paragon to get it out the door, but you know, they definitely intend to get people back on Fortnite and get it released and available. It was originally planned for the 360 and PS3, and since the delay and its rehash, right now it's targeted only at the PC. So. Do any of you guys remember hearing about this game a few E3s ago? And glad to hear that that Epic is still sticking with it, or ambivalent.
Yeah, I remember seeing some of the screenshots and a little bit of the video. It was almost the base building aspects. You know, it seemed to come out at a time when Minecraft was hitting big, and maybe a little bit, you know, whether it's tower defense or a little bit of mobile aspects in there. It seemed to be a mishmash of things. So I wonder if part of the delay was trying to find what the real vision of that game is. So at the same time, you know, they have a good history of making games that use their Unreal Engine or the newest version of their Unreal Engine incredibly well, right? Being a showcase for what that engine can do. So getting a good Unreal Engine 4 game out there to kind of highlight some of that, it could be pretty beneficial.
Yeah, Gray, did you have any thoughts on that?
No, you know, I haven't been tracking that game. I kind of, after Dead Island, I kind of had my fill of the whole zombie game, so I haven't been keeping track of it.
Okay. So, Gray, did you have some news that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, and you and I also have a topic we want to talk about together, but before we get to that, hey, new free Destiny content coming out on April 12th, I believe. So all you Guardians, time to jump back in. You'll have some new stuff to do. I'm looking forward to it. There are 3 Bungie Twitch streams happening, which I've posted over at the casualadultgamers.com website. And I'll probably catch Arex Gaming, a great gamer out of the UK who does great synopsises of the Bungie videos, so I'll probably just catch his replays because they are during the Bungie Twitch streams are during the workday, and they, no offense, but they kind of seem to be like a very casual pace, and I'm more of a northeastern, high-strung, high-paced kind of guy, so I'd rather just get the Cliff Notes, but excited about that, and then new video, I think it was posted last night or today, showing Halo 5 Warzone Fireflight, which is going to be 8-player PvE, and it looks awesome. So 5 waves, so I'm kind of feeling a little like Prison of Elders here, but 8 players, man, not 3. So I'm thinking that's going to be a fun free mod, and I'm definitely going to be enjoying some of that. I'm taking a break from Destiny when that comes out in the Division. To get some co-op fun in. So I don't know if you guys seen that, but to me that video looked pretty awesome. And then the news story that you guys have kind of been holding for me, and it's kind of morphed now. Originally there was a lot of talk about Xbox One and upgradable Xbox Ones, and Phil Spencer kind of, everybody was asking him, "Oh, you're going to send me a mod and I can use a screwdriver and open up my Xbox?" And that's actually something I thought about quite a bit before Phil had his talk at, I think it was GDC. And because, I've been thinking, hey, all the Xbox One games are coming at 900p versus 1080p over on the PS4. I mean, a lot of them. And the PS4 is just has better horsepower. Apparently, it just has more horsepower. No matter what Microsoft has done to release resources, most games that release on both platforms release at a much better resolution on the PS4. And so, how is Microsoft going to deal with that? And so, when I heard this announcement, I was kind of hoping they would let us modify them ourselves, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. But it made sense to me when they started mixing that announcement with this new Windows Unified platform. Because PC games for decades, literally decades, I was talking about Jedi Knight earlier, that game supports resolutions from, oh, I know it does 640 by 480. I think it actually does less than that, all the way up to 1920 by 1080. And this is a 20-year-old game. Windows games scale. They can scale in both textures and in resolution. And so I was thinking, Microsoft wouldn't be, it wouldn't be, it would be a great idea for Microsoft to say, here's an Xbox 1.5, and it has the horsepower to do 1080p, and every game you bought on your original Xbox One rather, and all new games that come out on the X for the Xbox One will work both on this new console and on the old console. Except on the new console, newer games will be able to scale up to 1080p. And I'm like, all the developers have to do is have two options in the game, 900p and 1080p. They do that on the PC already. They have, well, several, more than two. They have several. So it would make a lot of sense. And now, with the announcement Zeus is going to talk about, I think it not only makes it that Microsoft has to do it, but they have to go beyond 1080p, and I think it's a must now. So Zeus, tell us about your other news story.
Yeah, and I don't know how official this is. And I caught the story over on usgamer.net, but it's mainly an amplification of a story originally run on Kotaku. But writers on Kotaku claim that they have the inside track on what Sony is planning on doing, and that Sony is definitely planning on releasing a hardware update to the PlayStation 4 later this year that will feature more powerful hardware, primarily oriented around going back and implementing support for games in 4K resolution. So right now, as it is, the PlayStation 4 supports 4K, but that's only for use in video playback. It does not support 4K games. So again, the rumor is that is that a PlayStation 4 SKU with a more powerful processor and more powerful graphics hardware will be released probably in the fall. So there's a lot of discussion that this is, PlayStation, Sony and, arguably Microsoft, if they follow suit, that this is the two of them kind of moving more towards a Nintendo model, where, with Nintendo, it's a given that there's going to be a hardware refresh during the life cycle of a model, sometimes two or more. And I don't really feel like it's so much that. It kind of surprised me that there were journalists who brought that up, because the big two have always done a hardware refresh sometime during the life cycle of that console, right? With the Xbox 360, we had the 360 Elite. There are also multiple SKUs of just the baseline Xbox 360. That address the heat problem. And the PlayStation 3, of course, had the PlayStation 3 Slim. We had the PlayStation 3, the original form factor model with kind of the big belly curves on it. And then a later SKU went to a more to the slimline PlayStation 3, which still had the curves, but was smaller. And then eventually, I think there was one other SKU, a PS3 maybe, that came out. But I mean, so now that we know and understand that, or believe that Microsoft and Sony are going to be putting out, you know, new SKUs of their hardware sets. Do we think that this is surprising? Does this feel like something new? Because to me it's not, and I'm really surprised about all the rhetoric around this being representative of some huge monumental shift in how manufacturers in the console industry kind of get things done. Gray, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with you when it comes to console versions. So I have a lot of them here in my man cave. And, you know, even going back to the Atari 2600, right? How many different versions of that there was. And then the Sega Genesis, remember all the different versions of that, hardware versions. The 360, the PS2, the PS1, right? Even the PS1, they had multiple versions of. So, yeah, I think it's normal to drive cost out of the system and make a more reliable system over time. Well, in most cases, more reliable. I mean, there are some consoles that stand out that didn't have multiple versions. For instance, I don't think the Dreamcast was around long enough to have multiple versions. And I don't know if the NES, that little gray box, I don't think that ever changed. But most consoles do evolve, and that's become pretty standard. However, I think the big thing, like if we look at the 360, I had the insider scoop I had heard was that even though the 360 had a faster processor, the newer ones, that it was locked at the slower rate so it would perfectly emulate the older hardware. And so this, I think this is different in a way that you're going to get, and I go back to the PlayStation 4, maybe 4.5, and saying that the articles I read made it sound like a big reason for doing this was to be able to get rid of that external box needed with the PSVR. They need that additional processing power. You know, I don't think there's a huge driving force right now behind 4K gaming. In 4 years, there probably will be. But today, I don't think many people have 4K TVs, right? So, I think their driving force is for the PSVR and getting rid of that extra box. And that extra box is needed to do the HDMI in and out, to do a lot of the processing for the audio, to allow viewing on two different devices, and so on. So I think they want to put all that power that's in that external box inside the PlayStation 4. And so you will inherently, if they do release a PlayStation 4.5, you will get a machine that has more capabilities that can play your games in a higher resolution than your original PlayStation 4 could. And I don't know that something like that has happened before. And I think Microsoft has the capability to try to catch up to the performance level of the PS4, or now the PS4.5, with their iteration. I mean, I can think of nothing better happening to Microsoft than this leak coming out. Because if Microsoft would have released an Xbox 1.5 that did 1080p, the same time the PS4.5 came out doing 4K, I think that would have been horrific for Microsoft. So, but I think we're talking about not new hardware with new chipsets that are faster and cool, that are cooler, and that are more reliable. We're talking about almost like upgrading a video card in a computer. Yeah, your storage may not change, the look may not change too much, but you definitely have more power. And I think that might be a first, right? We're not talking like an accessory that nobody adopts. We're talking the mainline console being replaced with a more powerful unit. So I don't know, Zeus. That's kind of how I see it being a little different. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that.
I still feel that there have been similarities in the past. You know, the Xbox 360 Elite was just a hardware update. You know, it was a faster processor, a better heat sink, and maybe a slight tweak to the GPU. You know, this is the Sony approach is that, but on a much bigger scale. So yeah, I mean, I just feel like, I mean, the 3DS XL, right? The 3DS XL new version that just dropped, almost entirely in a processor update and GPU and And they added the dual analog sticks, right? So I feel that there have been instances of a life cycle update where the new SKU is, in some ways more powerful than the original. Although I will admit, it feels like this is on a completely different scale. I don't think that the jump has been as big as this one might be if it enables 4K gaming.
Yeah, I think, and I was just going to say, I think the 3DS XL, the new 3DS, is the cautionary tale about this too, right? Is the idea of fracturing the market that, I think that, you're right, that there have been upgrades where they've been able to reduce the components have become cheaper, more affordable, and so they've been able to slim down that form factor, reduce the price, the production price, and squeak out a little more profits. But at least from everything that I've read about this and the idea of being able to upgrade it, the idea of whether it's, 4K or increasing processing power, that does kind of change the scope of what that hardware can do. It's not quite the same as the Xbox 360, the elites getting locked in the old version, so that it was running the same way as Gray was talking about. It's that idea of, does half of your collection, will it all play on the new one? How do you market a game that only plays on the new one, right? I mean, I think the idea, and we talked about this a little bit last week, I think this makes a whole lot of sense from a production standpoint, right? I mean, PCs have been doing this forever. I think it could be really beneficial. I don't know that this is the generation when it happens, but I think as they develop and design what that next generation looks like, this seems like a logical next step. One final piece. Gray, there, just for fact-checking, Gray, there was a form factor upgrade for the original NES. It's a little harder to find. It came out after the SNES. It's a top-loading one, and the NES controller is that rounded kind of dog-bone shape like the SNES. So it's out there,
like
a little trickier to find.
Does it look like a smaller Super NES? I think I know what you're talking about.
Yep, except the colors are red and black and white. Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see where that all goes, and I'd probably be suckered into buying the new Xbox 1.5 if all my games will be as good as what they are on the PlayStation 4.5, but only if. With that, any other news, guys? I'm looking at the list here. It seems like we got all of those. And I guess you guys, go ahead. I think you guys agree with me. So let's move into our third segment and the topic of the week, which we have agreed to as being, well, we'll start off with The Division. And what everybody thought about it, their thoughts and impressions. And since you guys have talked about this a little bit in the previous episode of the show, I'm just going to start with mine if there's no objections. And, this is a third-person... I would call it a third-person RPG military tactical shooter, if there is such a thing. It's set in the Tom Clancy world. I think everybody's probably already seen the commercials for the game. It's set in New York during a terrorist attack of a mutated strain of, or engineered strain of smallpox is released on New York on Black Friday. And you come in as a secret undercover agent who's been mobilized to help restore order and help the police and help, you're like an elite, really BA type character who is coming in to help all these lowly police and National Guard people who apparently aren't as good as you. Matter of fact, 10 of them together aren't as good as you. So you're really, really super duper. And it supports the first few missions, kind of almost a tutorial, but it doesn't feel like it. Is single player only, kind of like the first mission in Destiny, although it seems a little bit longer. Is in Brooklyn, and I like how that story concludes, and you get brought over to, I believe, Manhattan, and stop playing and opening up your base of operations and expanding it. I know some of this was talked about in the previous podcast, so I won't go through that, all that. But so far, I got to say, I love it. I love the drop-in and drop-out co-op, as I said earlier. I struggle, always struggle with third-person cover systems, you know, trying to get unstuck from the cover. But I enjoy it. I've enjoyed the game. I've enjoyed playing it by myself, but I also enjoyed playing it with, like, a, I don't know, at least 10 different people I've played co-op with, and I've enjoyed it. To me, it's a solid co-op game, a lot of fun. And that's, I mean, I guess I think it's a little complicated when compared to other games like Destiny and whatnot. And I also think the stash is, which is kind of like the vault for your character where he can put stuff and his other characters can take stuff out, is a little limited. So it's about 10 times the size of your backpack, but seems to hold just the same amount as your backpack holds. So don't understand that. I've not having done a lot of research before the game come out and not having really researched the game since I've been playing it. Some things I find confusing, but as I learn things, I'm like, oh, that's what they're trying to do there. And that makes sense. I also just a shout out. You don't have to shoot the dogs. Don't listen to my friend Jetty. You do not have to shoot the dogs. They have never once bitten me. They're just a little crazy with what's going on. So please don't go around town thinking you're doing a service by shooting all the Fidos. You don't have to do that. That is, if you want to shoot the rats, that's fine, but I don't know if it's worth the bullets. But I'm enjoying it. I'm really, really enjoying it. So who wants to go next and give kind of your reactions to The Division?
Go ahead, DB. Jump in because I played the closed beta, I've played the open beta, I talked about it last week and was loving the game. My clock is at 16 hours. This week my clock is at 18 hours. So I think that tells you also kind of that I'm slowing down on this game. Maybe I, you know, dove into it really fast, or maybe, I guess the other piece of it is there's a lot to love in this game. I am an RPG loot-driven kind of player. I really enjoy, historically, I enjoy third-person action games more than first-person games. You know, so this feels like it really scratches a lot of itches. It's a beautiful world. You know, as Gray, you were talking about kind of exploring it. It really is. It's an amazingly rendered space. And it's great. The matchmaking works wonderful, right? I mean, you just got done talking about the debacle in Vault of Glass and Destiny and having three people bail on you. In The Division, everything has matchmaking, whether it's, you know, wandering around and doing side quests or it's doing story missions. Most of my story missions, if I haven't been playing with friends, I've played with randoms. You know, every story mission that I've done except for maybe the first one, because I played through it multiple times in the beta, I've been doing matchmaking with randoms just to see how it plays out. And so that's been really enjoyable. It works pretty seamlessly. I can go back in, I can grab, you know, and do matchmaking right from the menu. I don't have to run all the way across town to do a matchmaking for my next mission. But I don't know if you've noticed this, Gray, and I guess I'll throw this at you because you've been playing with different people. So one of the things I learned last week in playing with a lot of different people is that the enemies scale to the highest player in the party. So I was playing with somebody when I was level 8, and another friend was level 7, and we grabbed third guy, another Destiny friend, and he was level 15, and so all the enemies scaled down because he was the highest, scaled down 5 levels from him. So we were going up against level 10 guys, which worked out fine because they dropped pretty good XP along the way. But I think what it does is I found that it makes it hard. This week, part of the reason why I haven't spent as much time with it is many friends on my friends list, you know, are up in the level 20s while I'm still in the mid-teens. And so the idea of matchmaking with those people doesn't work so well in the way that they're doing the scaling for enemies. Have you run into that at all, Gray?
Yeah, I have to agree with that 110%. It's not an issue we see in Destiny, and I believe the way they do it in Destiny is they just limit how much damage that higher level person can cause, so it doesn't have to ramp up all of the baddies. But in the Division, we noticed this Thursday launch week. I was in with Stone Cold, Furball, and Bullet, and Bullet was a he was double our level, and it made completing the missions difficult, I thought, for the rest of us. And Bullet said it several times. He says, "Yeah, this is, I'm making this hard on you guys because I'm bringing the enemies up with us, with me." So that is, I mean, I would say that is something that should be addressed. There should be a way to in other games seem to do it. I think Destiny's solution works well. You still can have fun playing co-op with, I've done it with my brother where he was a level 30 or 25 and I was a level 38. And we were able to play missions no problem, and enjoy the game. So doing strikes and whatnot. So I would recommend that besides the stash being too small, that they fix that. Fortunately, you can have four player slots, not just three, or so it seems. You can have four. I already have two, so that's good. And just rocking another character. It would be nice if you've already gone through Brooklyn twice to be able to skip it with your third or fourth character, just so you can start a new co-op, round with somebody else brand new. But no, I agree with that, DB.
So Zeus, before I turn it over to you, I want to stop glowing about the game and say I think part of the reason why I've only put in another 2 hours in this last week is I feel like I'm just doing the same stuff again and again. The story missions are interesting. I kind of know what's coming in the narrative, and I'm actually, as a Tom Clancy novel fan, I'm kind of interested in that aspect of it, but the end game of just simply running more daily missions with more bullet sponge enemies doesn't get me excited. It doesn't give me anything to really work toward. And I feel like, while the missions may be set in different areas or with different enemies, I'm still basically doing cover-based shooting from spot to spot. And so my incentive to go back in has really died off this week. I still like the world, but I don't know that there's anything that holds me there. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. Kind of a mixed bag. I don't know. I think I'm kind of continuing to kind of trickle away from it. Zeus, last week you talked about just getting into it. Have you had any more time to play, or are you, where are you at with the game?
The game to me is kind of a staple. It's neat. It's one of those games that, in this day and age where, I've commented before about, we've seen an erosion of just like the basic simple lobby system that easily enables you to connect with people and get into a game very quickly. We've seen that erode. It's being replaced by these overly convoluted, overly complex, unnecessary, matchmaking systems, that often don't reflect a physical lobby. It's been nice, at least at the Division. At least from what I've seen, and I haven't played a lot of multiplayer. At least, you get into a game, it readily presents enemies, it readily presents them frequently enough, and gives you sufficient ammo to get in and engage in the mechanics of the game. And I mention that because there's something else I've been playing. Not, it wasn't one of the things on my playlist this week, but there's another game I've been playing recently where just the space and time between a given engagement is so far that, maybe it was Tomb Raider, where I just felt like for, the definitive edition, I just felt for like an hour of gameplay, I feel like I'm only in control of the character for, maybe 35 minutes of that game time. And as far as then actual engagement with enemies, it's like, 15 or 20 minutes, for an hour of gameplay. So I like that the Division is you drop in, you engage enemies, you shoot, cover, have fun blowing stuff up, and then you can disengage if you want to. I think there's a lot of similarities to it in Destiny, both in terms of both its pluses and its limitations. Yeah, just like you said, a reason I haven't gone in and played frequently is because, as you guys know, I'm just not gonna level chase, like, to keep up with friends. Like, you know, just because a friend of mine invests 12 hours in the game that week, that doesn't mean I have 12 hours of time to invest. So it's unfortunate to hear the feedback that it has some of those constraints. And I think I understand what you're saying, Gray, but I don't know. I guess I just feel like Destiny also still had that problem. You know, going in and playing with people, you know, vastly higher than you. I guess it wasn't character driven. It was more, you know, what was the indicated recommended level of characters that a mission might indicate. Where if you selected a mission based on the other person's rank, then you would just get trounced and not have a great time. But yeah, I mean, I guess where I am with the game is it's good. It's kind of a staple food. I'm glad that it's in my library so that I can pick it up and jump into multiplayer if I ever want to. But I don't necessarily know that I'm going to invest, you know, 20 something hours per week during this month that it's launched. Because what I haven't been exposed to is any very strong hooks that make me want to get back in the game. You know, whereas like with Halo 5, even though I wasn't able to make every play session, when we were playing co-op to get through the campaign, at least when I the sessions I did make, I felt very engaged and very interested to see the story unfold. And I haven't seen the same type of engaging content available in The Division.
You know, I would love to go back and do Halo 5 again. I enjoyed that story. Even though if it's not the most sensible or you know, I don't know, doesn't make a lot of sense, I still enjoyed going through it. You know, yeah, in Destiny, if you go certain places, you'll see characters with question marks where you can't see their level because they're just so far ahead of you, you don't have a chance. And the same is true in The Division. If you go to certain parts of town or certain parts of the dock zone, they're just going to be places where you are going to get mopped up. However, you know, The Division just does this thing when you're on a mission. It, you know, if you have a 15, everybody else is 8, you're going to be fighting level 12, 13 enemies. And it just seems like that balance just doesn't seem right. It, you know, I'm okay with, and I love how when you go into a new section of town, there's not only the name of the town comes up, like Hell's Kitchen, but also the level of enemies you expect to see is underneath it. And it tells you, well, you're going to expect to see 10 through 15 in here. And then it'll say hard or easy or regular. So it gives you an idea when you walk into a new area, is this an area outside of my zone, outside of my comfort level? My character's going to struggle. But, yeah, it does do that different thing when you're in a group and doing the co-op stories, which is difficult.
Yeah, that's very 1990s game design. Like, that is straight out of 1990s, early 2000s, like, design docs for games, and you would think in 2016 that we would have moved beyond that.
Yeah, and I don't know. I haven't done any research on the game. I don't know what the thinking was. I do know I'm enjoying it, both single-player and the drop-in, drop-out co-op with no race to get to the end because, you know, I'm playing maybe once or twice a week now. That launch week is over, so that's it. I mean, I personally won't be able to give my final review on the game for some time to come because it's a deep game. You would have to put a lot of time into it to quickly, you know, like I think I'm at 14 hours with my first character, 2 hours with my second, and I'm just taking my time with the game. I don't see any need to rush. Any final words on The Division, DB?
So, yeah, I guess, you know, taking your time with the game means that you want to keep playing it. And that's where I'm struggling right now, is I'm finding myself more on Zeus's end of there's nothing really pulling me back in. I loved playing it. I really enjoy playing it. You know, and maybe that's the staple that Zeus is talking about, right? It's an easy game to kind of dive back in. you know, it doesn't take a whole lot to, you know, I'm not getting any caught up on the mechanics because they're pretty sound. The UI is going to give me a pretty good idea of where I need to go. You know, there's lots of small little side missions to, you know, pop in and play for 20 minutes like I did on Saturday. But at the same time, there's nothing really exciting that's dragging me back in. And maybe that's, and so I'll admit, maybe that's because what did it for me in Destiny is it's a whole new world to explore. You know, that the level design is interesting and foreign. You know, same thing with Halo 5, even Borderlands, you know, that I'm getting in a lot of diverse environments and the ability to explore them is really interesting. You know, where right now I feel like I'm in New York and it's a beautifully rendered city, but I'm still just hiding behind a barricade or a trash can or a car, or maybe I'm in a different type of building, but these are all buildings that I've experienced in real life, and so while I can appreciate the level design, it's not something that is that exciting for me. And so that's where I can really respect what the game does. I love how it's deep. I think that if you like a military shooter, you know, that there's a lot here to enjoy. But at the same time, you know, I guess it feels very vanilla-y.
I hear you. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens when I open more of my home base, more of my wings. I'm looking forward to being able to travel to more parts of the city to see what they look like. Hopefully they don't look identical. Some of the missions have been long, like a good half hour, 45-minute missions with three or four people. And they've been memorable. Almost like I'll never forget the last array in Destiny, because it's a memorable mission with some very memorable music. And so there's been a few of those in The Division for me so far. I hope there's a lot more. That'll make me want to play through it again. You know, want to create four characters, want to be able to share the weapons I get from the characters, kind of like I do with Destiny. So I hope it has legs. What about you, Zeus? Any thoughts, final thoughts on The Division as you're just getting started with it?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm going to continue probably playing, predominantly focused on the single-player experience. Oh, that's you, great. Now, do you know whether or not it's feasible to play through the game? You know, does the game have an ending that is accessible in the single-player mode only?
You know, I'll let DB. DB, you've done some work on that. Tell us a little bit about what you've heard of the end game.
So the ending is, whether it's not necessarily, it's not a cliffhanger, but it is, it certainly opens it up for either expansions or a sequel, right? I mean, so I was listening to the IGN's Division podcast where they were kind of talking about the conclusion of the game. It's all, you know, you can get up to levels 30, you can run through all the story missions. It's not like Destiny where the real ending is hidden behind a raid. You know, the real ending here is all from single-player content. And I think it's got some pretty good twists. You know, it certainly sets up a nice world for them to continue building on. And that's probably, you know, it's nice that it's not locked behind a six-person raid to see that true ending.
Yeah, we finished up the last mission in Taken King last night. It's like, we really didn't kill the Taken King, did we? No, you do that in the raid, so I hear what you're saying there. No, that's good. That's good to hear. I think for me, Zeus, anyways, you let me know how you feel, but this would be a game where you and I, we could meet up, or in DB, if you still have the game, we could meet up and start a new character and try to just play through with our new character, you know, whenever we could, maybe once a week, get together. So that's how much I like it. I could definitely go through it again.
Yeah, that's something I would definitely be up for. Just like you kind of mentioned, it's, you know, and it's so hard these days, but you, if you do want to play multiplayer, you want to play with people who kind of have that same approach and philosophy, which is, this isn't a race, you know, I'm not allocating 12 hours a week to put into this, but, but I would like to chew away at some of it, you know, a little bit at a time. So yeah, I'd definitely be up for that.
Yeah, no, that's been a joy with Destiny, just to use that third slot as kind of the rotating slot if somebody gets the game, the create a new character and just enjoy the game through with them. And guys, I'm looking at the time. We're pretty much running over. I'm just throwing out to you guys any final thoughts before we close this episode of the Band of Gamers podcast. Starting with you, DB. Any final words?
No, it's good to have you back, Gray.
Well, it's good to be back. You guys did a phenomenal job without me. Really proved that you don't even need me. How about you, Zeus? Any final thoughts before we close the show out?
Nope, nothing specific on the games.
All right. Well, I'm already looking forward to next week and our next podcast, and hopefully our good friend Osiris will be back. But until then, I want to thank all our listeners for coming back and listening each week. And on behalf of myself, Greylock3491, and my co-host, DBQ Hams and Zeus Adamus, I want to thank you for listening. And until next time we talk, peace.